Thank you, Patrick. So today we're going to talk about our recent work, which is a phenomenological theory for the Z2 spin liquid phase of spin 1/2 Ptolemy Heisenberg anti-ferrite magnet. So to begin this, I'd like to briefly summarize the problem. So this is the Ptolemy lattice, and each side has a spin 1/2 spin there. And the Hamiltonian is simply the Heisenberg standard nearest neighbor Heisenberg Hamiltonian. So this the Ptolemy Heisenberg anti-ferrite magnet has been a very hot topic since it was started in 1990s by Zen and Elser. So interestingly, there are many bright people, brilliant people working on this problem and end up with very different results. So we have a landscape of different zero temperature phases. So for instance, we have valence bound crystals proposed by people doing series expansion of quantum dynamo model plus exact diagonalization and using or mirror. And also, we also have U1 Dirac spin liquid proposed by Patrick and Xiaogang by using three fermion mean field theory and with the help of some with help of variational Monte Carlo method or improved by Lanczos methods. And from the DMRG side, people have identified the Z2 spin liquid phase. And here we have heard some interesting talks. And for instance, there are people proposing the chiral topological spin liquid, or there's certain P6 symmetric breaking, or even more exotic, striped spin liquid phase crystal in the conference. So we definitely have a lot of different proposals, and we have a wide landscape of ground states. But but our situation is not hopeless comparing to the string theory landscape problem where we have 10 to the power of 500 different ground states to compare. So since I'm building up a phenomenological theory for the Z2 spin liquid phase, so I'll focus on the results from a DMRG. So here shows the ground state. So all those plots are taken from Yan, Hughes, and White science paper in 2011. So first of all, DMRG gives us the best energy estimate for the ground state. And also they have found a sizable singulate gap. And more recently, by using the so-called SU2 DMRG method, people could extrapolate the circumference of the tube to infinity and find that the triplet gap is roughly 0.13. And with the ground state wave function, we can also try to characterize it by using entanglement entropy. So we know that for a Z2 spin liquid phase, if we have a cylinder and biparted a cylinder into two halves, the scaling of the entanglement entropy between those two halves should have this linear form with this extra piece, and this extra piece indicates the Z2 nature of the ground state. So indeed, those people have found that the ground state wave function behaves as predicted by the Z2 spin liquid theory. In addition to those ground state properties, we can also try to perturb the ground state and study the responses. So most interestingly, Spin White and his collaborators have identified this so-called diamond resonance. So what we did was they simply strengthened certain bounds in the Ptolemy lattice and observed the response of the ground state. And they found that if they strengthen the increase the exchange direction along this particular diamond-shaped loop, they found the strongest response. Also, there is also the so-called even-odd effect on cylinders. So they found that if the unicell of a cylinder contains even number of spins, they have a pretty much uniform ground state. However, if the unicell contains odd number of spins, they found this particular this particular valence bound density wave states. So we have, to see this here, the thick lines indicating increased spin, nearest neighbor spin-spin correlation, and the dashed lines means decreased nearest neighbor spin-spin correlation. So if you look at those strings and bounds, you find this alternating pattern of straight line and the zigzag chains. This is actually in reminiscence of the recent work by Hong Chen Jiang and his collaborators on the Z2 spin liquid phase of J1, J2 squared Heisenberg anti-ferrite magnet. So a summary of the MRG findings. So far we haven't found any discernible signature of SU2 symmetric breaking or translational symmetric breaking. And also people have identified a sizable spin triplet gap and also very short range spin correlation. And of course, there's a strong signature of the Z2 topological entanglement in entropy in the ground state. So all of those properties are pretty much the universal properties of gap the Z2 spin liquid. So what I mean is, if people say that the ground state of gap the Z2 spin liquid, all those properties are pretty much what we expect. On the other hand, we also have those peculiar diamond resonances and the even odd effect with those particular valence bound density wave patterns. So to understand those properties, we actually need a phenomenological Hamiltonian, and this phenomenological Hamiltonian should be able to capture the DMRG phenomenology. So this is actually inspired by the work by Hong Chen Jiang, Hong Yao, and Leon Balance in their J1, J2 model paper. And so there they actually build up a phenomenological Hamiltonian which reproduces the DMRG phenomenology. So this is John von Neumann's comment on phenomenological models. He says, with 4 parameters, I can fit elephant, and with 5 parameters, I can make an elephant wiggles his trunk. So the goal here is to make an elephant. Here is the metaphor for quantum spin liquid to wiggle its trunk with 2 parameters. So the starting point of this construction is actually not directly from, is actually not the Kagome-Heisenberg model. Rather, the starting point is the quantum dimer model on a Kagome lattice. So to give a quickly a review of this Kagome quantum dimer model, so here each dimer represents a singulate formed by two nearest neighbor 3½ spins. So the dimer condition, the Hausdorff condition demands that each side is covered by a dimer, which means that each spin has to participate in a singlet, and there are only one dimer on each bound. So so all those different dimer coverings span the low energy singlet space for the Heisenberg Hamiltonian. The quantum dimer model basically describes how one particular dimer covering pattern goes to another. This is fulfilled by those no-code tunneling processes. For instance, here if you look at the big star, we have this particular dimer covering, and there is a conjugate dimer covering patterns. And if you overlay those two patterns, you find this particular loop. So all those tunneling processes can be written as this particular loop moves. So people have derived the quantum dimer model from Heisenberg model. For instance, this is the early paper by Zinn and Elser in 1995, and this is a more recent work by Poy Blanc. And they can calculate all those coefficients for those tunneling processes, and also the potential energy for particular dimer covering. But all those works are derived from Heisenberg model. So here, we do not attempt to derive the quantum dimer model from Heisenberg model. Rather, we try to directly write down a quantum dimer model Hamiltonian which captures the DMRG phenomenology. I think this is a major difference from our work, between our work and the earlier works. So the basis of our construction is the following observation. So we found there is a close relationship between the quantum dimer model on Kagome lattice and the Z2 game theory on honeycomb lattice. So to see this, we start with the so-called arrow representation discovered by V. Elser and Gen 10 in 1993. So the idea is the following. So if you look at a triangle, there are only two possible configurations. Either the triangle is covered by a dimer, or it is not. So we can associate those particular arrow arrangements with the triangle. And then if we do this, we find that all the dimers covering partons can be mapped to certain arrow arrangement on the honeycomb lattice. So if you look at this, the dimer constraints are the hardcore conditions for dimer covering are translated into constraints on the arrow arrangements. For instance, if we take a single triangle, then there are either three arrows pointing out from the center of the triangle, or there are two arrows pointing and one arrow pointing out from the center of the triangle. So take those arrow partons, we can actually use an Ising variable defined on the bounds of the honeycomb lattice. And if you take a honeycomb lattice, this is a particular example of this arrow representation. So we start with a particular dimer covering on Kagome, and we can draw those arrows and end up with arrow arrangement or arrow pardon on the honeycomb lattice. So we can do something, we can go one step further. We can define an Ising variable on the honeycomb, on the bounds of the honeycomb lattice. So it could be either 1 or minus 1. And we can map arrows to these Ising variables. So because we know that the honeycomb lattice is a bipartite lattice, so we can define A and B sublattices, and we demand that if the arrow is pointing from an A side to a B side, the value is 1. And if the arrow is pointing from a B side to an A side, it's minus 1. Then by using this particular mapping from arrow orientations to Ising variables, we find that the constraints on the arrow arrangements can be formulated in terms of a Z2 Gauss law. So if we take a single vertex in the honeycomb lattice, and we multiply all the three Ising variables emanating from the center of this vertex, then the product is either 1 if the vertex belongs to an A side, or minus 1 if the vertex is a B side. So this is precisely the Gauss law for Z2 game theory, and we can interpret this Ising variable as a Z2 electric flux. So this is actually based on this observation, we showed that the Hilbert space of the Kagome quantum dimer model is exactly identical to the Hilbert space to certain Z2 game theory on honeycomb lattice. And any Kagome quantum dimer model Hamiltonian can be written as a Z2 game theory Hamiltonian on honeycomb lattice. I think this has been noticed by many people working on quantum dimer model, but here I just presented in my opinion, a more straightforward way. So far, I've been talking about the connections between the Z2 game theory and Kagome quantum dimer model. And the goal, of course, is to have a Z2 spin liquid. So we know there is a famous Liskish Serban-Pasquier Hamiltonian on Kagome for the Kagome quantum dimer model, which gives us a Z2 spin liquid phase. So here I'm trying to motivate this particular Liskish Hamiltonian from the Z2 gauge theory perspective. So we have defined the Z2 electric fluxes on all those bounds, and naturally we could also introduce the gauge potential operators, sigma z's, on those bounds. And they are canonical conjugate pairs, and they also obey the standard anti-commutation relation between those Pauli matrices. And with those Z2 gauge potentials, we can define the gauge invariant Z2 gauge fluxes associated with each plaquette of the honeycomb lattice. And of course, those Z2 gauge flux operators commute with the charge constraints. So they wouldn't bring one particular state in the Hilbert space out of the, bring one particular state out of the Hilbert space. And if you look at the action of this particular Z2 flux operators on the electric fluxes, we know that actually it flips all those arrows around this particular hexagonal placket. So if we take a particular error arrangement and if we act as an F alpha Z on it, then we get the reverse error arrangement. So this is precisely the dimer flipping processes in the quantum dimer model. And actually, there's something more interesting about this operator is that no matter which starting particular dimer arrangement we start with, if we apply the F alpha of Z operator on it, then we always get the conjugate arrangement with the same amplitude. Here is simply one. So this is actually the so-called mu of H operator introduced by these people in 2002. So we have those Z2 gauge flux operators, then naturally you can write down the simplest possible Z2 gauge theory, a theory with only magnetic term. And because everybody commutes with each other in this Hamiltonian, so we can solve this Hamiltonian. So for instance, the ground state definitely contains no Z2 fluxes. So this is a cartoon showing the ground state. And if we want to write down the ground state in the electric flux basis, or in this dimer basis, then of course the ground state should be the equal amplitude superposition of all possible dimer coverings, because only this state obeys this particular identity equation. So this is precisely the Roxas-Kivelson state on Kagome lattice, and people have shown that this state has extremely short-ranged correlations. And also, we can also try to construct the excited states. So to construct excited state, we simply thread one Z2 flux through the hexagonal placket. And this is known as a Wison. So by looking at this Hamiltonian, we know that the Wison has no dynamics in this model. So if you look at the dispersion of Wisons, they are simply dispersionless. We found that the Miskiewicz Hamiltonian for Kagome quantum dimer model can be simply written as a simple Z2 gauge theory, and it gives us a Z2 spin liquid. However, unfortunately, this particular state is too simple to capture the DMRG phenomenology. So we have Z2 spin liquid Hamiltonian, but it's too simple. The natural thing to do is to perturb this particular Miskiewicz Hamiltonian. So naturally, because the Miskiewicz Hamiltonian is a Z2 gauge theory with only magnetic term, so naturally we want to include all those electric fluxes operators into the Hamiltonian. So here I consider a very simple form, which contains the linear terms of the electric Z2 electric flux operators, and also it contains the quadratic interactions between the electric flux operators. And we try to determine the form of those coefficients by using symmetry analysis. So first of all, if you look at linear operator, we find that actually that violates the inversion symmetry of the Hartkopf lattice. So the inversion symmetry around the midpoint, with respect to the midpoint of the Hartkopf lattice span, demands that all the linear coefficients vanish. So we cannot have these linear terms. And we can also, then we look at those pairwise interactions. And to start with, we consider nearest neighbor and second neighbor interactions. And by using very simple analysis, we find that both nearest neighbor and second nearest neighbor interactions between those electric flux operators vanish. So the leading order interaction is actually between the third neighbors. Here I highlight a pair of third neighbors on the Hartkopf lattice in terms of those thick red lines. So the Hamiltonian actually is of course, now then we can write down the Hamiltonian as the following. So this is the Mishmash Hamiltonian, and this is the perturbation. So the perturbation is the interaction between those third neighbor electric flux operators. But then we have two free parameters. One is H, the tunneling amplitude, and then another is K, the other is K, which is the interaction strength. But here comes a question. What is the sign of this K? It could be positive or negative. Now we need the information from the DMRG calculation. So in this DMRG calculation, people have identified the so-called diagonal resonances, which is the tunneling between those two quasi-degenerate diagonal coverings. So if you look at these two particular quasi-degenerate diagonal coverings and translate them into aerial representations and further into Z2 electric fluxes, we find that all the correlations between the certain neighbor bounds are anti-ferromagnetic. For instance, the electric flux for this bound is -1, and the third neighbor is 1. So that means we want anti-ferromagnetic correlation between third neighbor electric flux operators, which means we have to choose a positive K. Yes?
What sets H to be positive?
Here I choose H because I think this is basically, a convention. So if I start with H being, H being positive because I want no Z2 fluxes in the ground state. So I want so if you look at each packet, then the ground state is invariant under this particular permutation of dimers. So then the ground state is the RK state. If I choose a negative H, then I think the ground state is no longer a RK-like state.
But you cannot rotate the sign of H with some...
I think you could, but I haven't looked into that possibility yet.
And also, what role does this staggering of the charges play, the 1, minus 1, on the A and B? When you define your, when you went from the Dymer model to the Z2 gauge theory, you had these constraints, and the
yes.
constraints were 1 and minus 1?
Yes.
Does that play any role, the fact that...
As far as the Hamiltonian is concerned, they don't, because every term in operator in Hamiltonian commutes with the charge operator, right? However, it turns out they are important when we want to explain the even odd effect. I'll come to that later. Okay, so we have this particular Hamiltonian with three parameters, and it's a standard Z2 gauge theory Hamiltonian. So we can use the standard technique to solve this problem, that is the using the duality transformation. So the dual theory for this Z2 gauge theory, of course, is going to be a quantum Ising model. So here is a brief summary of this duality transformation. So magnetic term is due to a transverse field term, and the interaction between electric flux operators are due to interactions between dual Ising variables, and the charge constraint becomes the so-called frustration condition. So if we work out this duality transformation, we found something very interesting. That is, because we have third neighbor interactions between those electric flux operators. So in the dual model, we have third neighbor interactions between those dual Ising variables. If you look at, and also the honeycomb lattice, of course, is dual to a triangular lattice. So if you look at the third neighbors on the triangular lattice, we find that the whole triangular plane is decomposed into four independent sub-lattices. So here there's A, B, C, D are labels for the different sub-lattices, and only dual spins within the same sub-lattice interact with each other. And if we take a particular sub-lattice, say A sub-lattice, we find that the dual model is an unfrustrated triangular quantum Ising model. So those are consequences of the charge constraint or in the dual language, the frustration condition. So we have these four independent sublattices. I think the fact that we have those four sublattices are closely related to earlier works. So in the earlier works, for instance, in the work, I forgot to mention those. So in the earlier works, for instance, by Frederick Mikolich and Todari Dentio, and by Ye Jinghun, Matthias Funk, and Sachdev, they use a different formalism to map a quantum dimer model to a Z2K theory. So in that formalism, the difference is, in that formalism, the mapping is not exact, and also the dual theory is different. But nevertheless, in the end, the NW is four. So in a dual non-dual dispersed theory, the NW is four component real fields, and those four real fields are transforming to each other and this particular projective symmetry group. I think the fact that there are four component real fields, and here we have four independent Ising variables, I think are connected. And also I want to emphasize that this particular decomposition is actually exact. It doesn't depend on the particular details of the of our construction. However, the decomposition is lost once we go beyond the quadratic level of the dual theory. So we would couple those sublattices would couple to each other at the quartic level. And here is a plot showing the dispersion of the Weissons. So the hexagon is the Boolean zone of the triangular lattice, and you can see that the minimum of the Weissons dispersion is located at the zone boundary. And of course, because we have four independent sublattices, there are going to be four degenerate bands for Weisson. So we have this particular Hamiltonian. We can try to understand the DMRG phenomenology. So first thing, we can start looking at the lifted topological degeneracy on cylinder. So what that means, we have in DMRG calculations, people use this particular periodic boundary condition. And so for a cylinder, we know that there are two topological sectors depending on the total electric flux threading through the cylinder. And for infinite cylinder, so if the circumference is infinite, those two topological sectors are exactly degenerate. However, for finite cylinder, the degeneracy is lifted. So we can perform this kind of calculation. And interestingly, we find that for the cylinders with circumference 8 and with 8, 16, and so on, the even sector has lower energy. However, for cylinders with 12 and 20 spins, the even odd sector has lower energy. So this particular oscillating is going to play a role in a later part of my talk. So to understand even odd effect, we can see this. Look at this problem from the dual picture. So we know that in the dual model, we have this decomposition of the whole triangular lattice into four sublattices. However, if we try to wrap this infinite lattice into a finite cylinder, then we might have a problem. So if we choose a Kagome lattice with even number of spins in unit cell, for instance, 8, then we find that the dual model has four dual sides in each row. So I enforce the periodic boundary condition in the horizontal direction. So here we see that there's no problem of dividing the whole cylinder into four sub-cylinders, and each one being independent from the others. However, for all the cylinders, for instance, look at this one, then we're going to have a problem. Because if you look at this row, I can say we have place A and B labels, and however we want to go back, then we have a problem. So you see that on all cylinders, we have this particular frustration in assigning those four sublattices into each other, to those sides. And so we know that for all senators, there's going to be frustration, and this frustration leads to those particular density wave patterns. Another way to look at it is look at the Zeta Gates theory. And if you look at the Zeta Gates theory, and we know that we have plus one and minus one charges on each side. And if for all the cylinder, for instance, the so-called YC6 cylinder, if we calculate the charge contained in each row, we find there's alternating minus one to one charges for each row. And those uncompensated charge are going to give us net electric flux, and those net electric flux gives us those particular dimer density wave patterns. So those show the comparison between of the theory and DMRG calculation. So this is the so-called YC6 cylinder, one of those odd cylinders. So in the top is the segment of the result of the DMRG calculation, as I have shown before, and the bottom is the prediction from our theory. We find that those two patterns match each other very well. And indeed, we have those alternating patterns, those three lines and the zigzag chains. And so in the paper, in their paper, Snowden's collaborators consider other boundary conditions, for instance, this particular chiral boundary condition. So in this chiral cylinder, they found this cylinder pattern, but the orientation of the pattern is different. So here we use the same boundary condition, and we found exactly the same pattern. And also, of course, we can calculate dimer-dimer correlation, and this is the prediction from our theory, and this is the DMRG calculation. So here I increase the exchange direction on this span, and of course we have a stronger spin spring correlation here. So if we compare the region near the strings and the bound, and the we find that actually patterns are close to each other. And more interestingly, if you look closer, we find there are alternating strong strings and weakened diamond patterns in the neighborhood of this strings and the bound. And this is very similar to what people found in the exact diagonalization. Okay, so far the theory is about the singular sector, so we cannot address any issues about the spin-offs. But we can still do something about it and trying to understand the spin-off behaviors. So for instance, if you we can try to remove a side from the Kagome lattice. If we remove the side, then we pin two dimers on those bounds, and those arrows show the electric flux pattern. If you calculate the total electric flux going through this this region, then the net flux is one. However, we know that if there is no spin-on, the number should be minus one, because we contain one A side and a B side, and the product is minus one. So we know that by removing a single side, we could have extra static Z2 charge in this region. And this can be understood as a static Z2 spin. And we know that in the finite cylinder, a static Z2 spin is actually interpreted as a domain wall of a topological sectors. For instance, the total electric flux going through the left half of the cylinder is one. Then once we cross this line, then it's going to be minus one. So there is a domain wall of a topological sectors. And so previously we know that for all cylinders, there are dimer density waves or valence bound density waves, and those symmetric breaking patterns are associated with the two topological sectors in that system. So if we remove a single site, we should be able to see a domain wall of those dimer, those valence bound density wave patterns. So the domain wall in the dimer density wave patterns is the manifestation of the domain wall of a topological sectors. And as a comparison, we can calculate this thing without the spin-off And if we don't put a spin on here, then there is no domain wall. And indeed, in our model, the energy for this state is smaller than the energy for the state without the spin on. So this should be able, people should be able to see this in the MRG, hopefully. And in the remaining time, I'm going to quickly talk about the project, the part we are still working on. This is the mystery of the open boundary conditions. So if you look at Steve White's paper closely, he used actually a very particular boundary condition, open boundary condition. So this is the lens direction of the cylinder, and this is the circumference direction. So he used this particular arrangement for the open boundary because with this particular arrangement, we can tile the whole cylinder with those diamond partings. And indeed, this gives us a better convergence. However, you can also, and indeed, if you use this particular arrangement, then we can get a uniform state. However, you can play with the boundary condition. You can remove a side from left and attach it to the right, to the right. And however, if we choose this new open boundary condition, then we found that, people found that there are irregular partings in the bulk. So this is quite mysterious, and we're trying to understand this from the literal spin theory, gauge theory perspective. So to understand this, we have to look at the edge closely. If you look, so first we start with this standard, standard boundary, open boundary condition. So if you look at this open boundary condition, we find that there are strong pinning of dimers near the edge. And those pinning partings can be translated in terms of the two electric fluxes. And we found that, so for instance, if you choose this particular, the standard open boundary, then we have alternating left and right arrows, or the two fluxes, and the total electric flux is one. And we know this is good. Why this is good? Because we know that for this particular cylinder, the so-called YC8, the even cylinder has lower energy. So there's a matching for the edge topological sector and the bulk topological sector. However, if we play with the boundary condition, we remove a side from the left and we look at the pin dimer pardon, we find that the edge has topological, the total Z2 charge minus one. On the other hand, if you look at this graph, we know that in the bulk, the energetics demand the bulk topological sector being one. So there's a mismatching of there's a mismatch between the boundary, between the edge topological sector and the bulk topological sector. So we know that there has to be a domain wall in between. And that domain wall is nothing but a Z2 spin-on somewhere close to the boundary. And the spin-on has to be bounded to the edge because we know that the energy for the odd state is higher than the energy for the even state. So effectively, there is a linear potential for the Z2 spin-on along the lens direction. So the spin-on must be confined near somewhere near the edge. However, in our theory, it's a purely singular, can study purely singular dynamics, and we haven't included any spin-on dynamics yet, so we cannot really understand the particular, reproduce this particular pattern. But the existence of this spin-on, edge spin-on, is a concrete prediction, or speculation. So to summarize, we have constructed a phenomenological theory for the Z2 spin-liquid phase, and we can naturally incorporate those diamond resonances into our model, and we can naturally explain the even odd effect. And moreover, we made some predictions. For instance, we speculate that there will be vacancy spin-ons confined near the vacancy, and there all might be the spin-ons confined near the edge. And these edge spin-ons are very can be understood in terms of the Z2 screening. This is very similar to the screening of electric field in a normal manner. And also, we want to go beyond the singular dynamics, which means we have to include spin-ons in our model, include the matter field into our model, because our model so far is a pure gauge theory. And that concludes my talk. Yes.
So if I ask some questions, so you constructed your phenomenological Hamiltonian by taking the leading order perturbation, which is allowed by symmetry order. So my question is that in real materials, the symmetry, crystal symmetry is often broken. And I think this Z2 spin limit is probably, of course, stable against infinite perturbation. But if you distort the crystal some finite but small amount, then probably you go into a different phase. My question is, maybe you can construct a phenomenological Hamiltonian for this in the presence of distortion of crystal to study some phase transition.
Yeah, that could be done, of course, if we lower the symmetry from the Kagome symmetry to something like distorted Kagome lattice. We could have other terms, which is and which might give us very different physics compared to the Stern-Hilbert interaction. But here we're not trying to understand the real material, for instance, Herbert Smith side. We're just limiting ourselves to this particular perfect Heisenberg model. Yes.
Yeah. So how is the sign structure of your Hamiltonian comparing to the derivation from the Heisenberg model? I mean, you see, in my talk, we also had an effective quantum diamond model, which was similar. I mean, our approach was more to take the derivation from Zeng and Elser and the modified one from Poilevin and Mambrini and Schwann, and somehow just twiddle a little bit one of the couplings to actually go from the valence bond crystal phase into the Z2, because they're very close. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how does that model compare to your one? Like, does it have the same sign structure of resonances
About the sign structure. So here, if you look at this table from Zeng and Elser in this early paper, we see there is alternating signs in the polynomial processes. However, in our model, we're just perturbing the stage serpent has clear automaton. So which means if you look at the tunneling amplitude, all of them have the same sign. So the sign structure, the sign structure of the tunneling amplitudes is different from the sign structure of the quantum diamond model as derived from the Heisenberg model.
You think that is important, or I don't know
because we're just trying to understand phenomenology. We don't attempt to derive or justify this Hamiltonian from first principles. But that could be a very interesting question. I mean, could there be any possible connections between those?
So what I was going to ask is how far from the derived, how far from the diamond model derived from the Heisenberg model is your model?
I don't know. I mean, we...
Well, you have terms in there which presumably are the same that I think the expansion from the...
Yeah, the question is, how do you compare two Hamiltonians? We can take, I mean, what's the measure for the distance of two Hamiltonians? I mean,
how many terms you have in common, say?
How many terms?
Yes.
Okay, so I can rewrite the Hamiltonian in terms of those coefficients. If we do that, then all those coefficients have polynomial coefficients are the same. And in addition, their potentials for diamond-diamond interactions, and this particular term has a non-zero coefficient, and all the others vanish. So
for your model.
Yeah, for my model. So they could serve as a guide as how different those two Hamiltonians are. But even though the two Hamiltonians might look very different at a face value, but they might give us similar physics, right? Yes, Rich.
And there are probably different aspects to it. I mean, some of the properties which you report here are probably somewhat generic to kind of a perturbed Z2 liquid. Like the Z2 liquid you start from is a kind of a static theory, but once you put in interaction, your bisons and so on disperse, and a lot of features you see about energy splittings are probably generic. But then there are other aspects, like increasing this resonance 8, that's something which gives kind of a non-universal correction, which is like that if you actually look into dimer-dimer correlations, the static C2 liquid has extremely short-range dimer-dimer correlations, and somehow we print some structure. But I think the sign structure of the couplings is probably not, it's probably part of the
So you are saying that there are certain generic features.
Yeah, which do
and there are also non-generic exactly. features.
Yeah. Now, you see that our approach, we somehow increase the term 8 on the one hand to dip into the C2 liquid. Mm-hmm. We also think that increasing the resonance term of the loop 8 is the one which actually gives you this diamond pattern. But I'm not sure that the diamond pattern is something which is generic to the interacting C2 spin liquid in general. That's perhaps particular to the Heisenberg.
Because as I mentioned, so the diamond resonance is definitely not part of the universal properties of gap to Z2 spin liquid. And those are, so to speak, details of the model. And we're actually trying to reverse engineer a particular Hamiltonian which could capture those non-universal aspects. And, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.